He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. And lucky you, you tuned in for our Valentine's Day special. What does that mean? Well, not much, really. It's just that it's the last one before Valentine's Day, and we want to remind you to come to the Valentine's Day workshop if you haven't been already. We do all kinds of neat stuff at the Valentine's Day workshop, which we haven't decided what that's going to be yet, but it'll be neat. Promise. The other thing we do for Valentine's Day is visit the families that we've worked with and helped out with the long-term care. And so we'll be making the rounds of the our team members. Well, not me personally. I'm doing those workshops. But team members will be visiting the local facilities and, you know, bringing flowers to our folks. And here's what we decided to do this year is just to say, hey, if you've got a loved one in a long-term care facility, right, if you've got a loved one, and you'd like us to stop by and, you know, just, I mean, we're not passing out cards here, okay? It's just, you know, we're there, we've got the flowers, and we'd be more than happy to, you know, drop one by if you'd like us to. Okay, it's just in and out. This is not. I got somebody saying, "Oh, yeah, you're going to be passing with all this propaganda." It's like, no. I mean, we're not. It's just flowers. That's all. That's all we're doing. And you know, one of those, you know, one of those kitty Valentines, that kind of thing. So, so just give us a, you know, if you email me with, you know, David@davidcarrierlaw.com. Just email me with the facility, the person's name, and the room number. Okay, and we'll just, hi, how you doing? Here you go. See you later. Boom. Out we go. Okay, and so that's, you know, that's something we're just doing. If you'd like to participate, well, we'd like to do that. That's no problem. Okay, we're talking to Don. Don's on the line. 888, he called 888-463-2843. 888-463-2843. You can, too. And, Don, let me see if I can recap what we're talking about. Your daughter, I guess it is, and her husband are buying a house on short sale. It's taken about a year, which is not unusual. Short sales take forever for the bank to get satisfied on all the particulars. And now we're supposed to go to closing in the next couple of days, but the seller now says they need an additional $8,000, and we can't really figure out why. Is that about right?
That's pretty much it in a nutshell, yep.
Okay.
Actually, the closing was supposed to be Friday, and that was early Friday that the dual agent called and said that they miscalculated somehow. I can't understand how they could have the date of the closing all settled and then all of a sudden figure out that they were off $8,000. But, yeah, the sellers were refinancing their current home in order to cover the difference. They'd gotten some kind of a settlement from a work injury or something, and like you said, they either saw the market improved or they are having different second thoughts. I don't know, but they decided not to let their credit get bad, is what the agent said, and that they made payments, and that's kind of delayed.
But you see, wait a second. Time out again. Because, you know, banks just don't willy-nilly do short sales, okay? A bank is going to do a short sale, and what bank are we talking about? It's not Bank of America, or is it? Or which bank?
I'm not exactly sure.
Doesn't really matter, okay? Doesn't really matter.
Yeah, the property in Wellston.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. The reason a bank does a short sale, right, is because we've got somebody who can't make the payments, isn't making the payments, and rather than foreclose on them and go through that whole rigmarole, instead of that, what they're willing to do is say, look, we couldn't have gotten more than $50,000 out of the property anyway. You've got someone who's going to give us the $50,000 without going through all the hoopla. Okay, fine, give us the $50,000 and we'll... But it takes forever to convince the bank that they're going to get more money by going through the short sale route than by doing a foreclosure. And banks hate it because if the word gets out that, oh, yeah, it's no big deal, you know, they'll just, you know, if you can't make your payments, they'll just give you the They'll just let you sell it for. I mean, that would be terrible for the banks because then people wouldn't have any.
Right.
You know, so
incentive to pay.
Yeah, exactly right. So this notion that, well, they've been still making the payments. What?
That's what the agent said.
To keep their credit. Hey, listen, a short sale explodes your credit. Okay, it's just the least worst alternative. That's why people do short sale. You know, it's the least worst thing to happen. And so, I don't know. It's just not. That's not adding up either. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying necessarily. I'm not saying necessarily that a bank wouldn't, in some circumstances, do a short sale, even if they were still making the payments, if there were other. You know, other things going on, if there were other factors going on, they might do it. It's not a never, ever happen, but you know.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. I don't think they know who the actual mortgage company is or something, because they've never been able to contact them. Everything's always been done through this dual agent. And so he would call them and tell them when something's changed. And it's just in the last month, they were kept wondering why it kept working so long, because he said the paperwork was all in, you know, everything was approved by the bank. And finally he called and said, well, you know, they were going to go to closing. They decided to keep paying, they kept paying the payments, and that's the reason why they didn't, short sale couldn't take place, is because it had to be over 30 days or 90 days late or some one of those type of things. So, and now all of a sudden, you know, the whole, they were going to close, they were going to, you know, fix their credit and this kind of stuff. And it's like, this is all kind of weird. It's late in the game. And I don't know if they should, like, bypass this agent and try to contact the mortgage company and see what's going on, or if they should send a letter first before they.
Yeah, yeah. There's lots of possibilities. And, you know, here's the thing. It could all be, it might all be straight as an arrow. It may be no problem. You know, it may just be one of those weird things, but that's really okay. Okay, that could happen, right? That might be the case. But the problem is, and this is especially true with a dual agency, you don't know what he's not telling you. Because in a dual agency, they can't tell you everything they know, right? You're not supposed to. If your daughter gave the agent we can go to this far but no further, okay? If she says that, and they're negotiating a price that's lower, right? But they say, well, you know, we're trying to get we'd like to buy it for 100, but we might go to 105. He's not supposed to tell the other side of his brain that they can go to 105, right?
Right.
And if that guy's willing to take 95, he's not supposed to tell the other half of his brain that he goes to, you know what I mean? It's just,
exactly.
You put the agent in a very, very difficult, schizophrenic, I don't mean to use schizophrenic in the technical term, apologies to schizophrenics. You know,
you're playing two sides.
Yeah. And it goes, you know, and what did I say before? You know, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, it's all in the Bible. Can't serve two masters, right? I mean, that's just humanity. That's the way people are. You can't serve, I mean, this is my view, you can't serve two masters. You can't, I mean, how can you really, you know, effectively represent both sides? And in a situation like this, where, as I say, the agent may be as straight arrow as Robin Hood, okay? He may be just telling it exactly correct. But where's your confidence that he's telling exactly correct? Because you know he's serving the other master.
Yeah. Like, you've got to trust but verify, and there's just no way to verify.
There's no way to verify. And in a trust relationship, the notion that the trust works in two directions is, how can you do that? You know, I've got a case coming up, and the way the law works is, if you represent the trustee, okay, you don't. Let's say you're the attorney and you're representing a trustee, okay. Your duty of loyalty, and this is one of the great things about Michigan law, because your duty of loyalty runs to the trustee. It doesn't run to the beneficiaries. It doesn't run to the memory of the person who created the trust way back when. It runs to the fiduciary, the person who's acting as patient advocate, who's acting as agent, who's acting as trustee. That's where your duty of loyalty runs. Not to some general concept, but to that individual carrying out that job. Now, it's your responsibility as the attorney to let that person know the parameters in which they can work, right? They can't lie, you know, all those sorts of things. But it's not, you're not balancing, well, you know, they say this and that's kind of reasonable, and this one says this and that's kind of reasonable. Blah, blah, blah. Forget it. You can't do that. You can't. So it says, look, you represent the person who occupies the trustee position or the patient advocate position or the agent under the power of attorney. That's who you represent. That's where your loyalty lies, and operate from there. This dual agency stuff is just flies in the face of human nature, seems to me. Well, thanks for the call, Don. I'm getting the high sign here. We've got to get out. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
You make me feel so young. You make me feel so spring has sprung. And every time I see you grin, I'm such a head up high.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. this is a special Valentine's Day edition of the David Carrier Show. So we're going with the old Blue Eyes romantic song. That was more inspirational than anything else, you know. Well, anyway, hope. Hopefully we'll get back more to Days of Wine and Roses on the a little bit later on. Let's see, what do we got? What do we got going on here? Number one, Valentine's Day workshop. Yes, you need to go. 888-463-2843. That's how you sign up. You can drop me an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. You can go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com, for the Valentine's Day workshop. On Valentine's Day, of course, we, as on every holiday, we do lots of crazy stuff, and usually we can't promise you anything because we don't figure it out until like the night before, but it'll be worth it. And you know, it's always a good time. The other thing that we are doing though is we, you know, make the rounds of the nursing homes and the other places where our families are, and you know, drop off flowers and stuff. And if you'd like to get on the list, if you'd like to get your loved one on the list. We've got plenty of flowers coming in, and just drop me an email. Easy to do, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. You know that's the address, and just let us know what facility, name of the person, room number. Okay, we'll make sure they get a, you know, a rose or you know whatever it is we're doing. I think it's roses this year, but they'll get a nice little, you know, nice little thanks, and you put your name on it too, you know, because courtesy of you. So. You know, so they'll know who was the their secret Santa, or I don't know what the equivalent is with Valentine's Day. But anyway, if you'd like us to drop, you know, we're going to be there anyway. Okay, we're going to be at I don't know, I can't think of a facility we won't be at. But if we're at yours, just you know, we'd be more than happy to do it. Just let us know. Now I'm talking today about this conference we just went to. We brought about half the team down there, and you know, just to kind of recharge, refresh, connect with other. We had people from Alaska, Hawaii, you know, New York, California, everywhere, and it's it really is kind of, well, there's only 45 firms, so that leaves out five states, I guess, but almost everywhere, and. You know, really a kind of a good opportunity. And one of the things that they, one of the speakers was talking about was the use of technology. And, you know, oh, it's going to be so disruptive, blah, blah, blah. And back in the day when I got started, you know, it was cut and paste, literally cut and paste. And we were just glad we had Xerox machines, you know, copy machines that you could photocopy the stuff. But times have changed, you know, and. Even in my time in service, I was, like I say, I was at the Pentagon. I was the software development officer for the Judge Advocate General Corps. And, you know, we saw a lot of progress, definitely, in the area of automation, office automation, and what have you. But I'll tell you, one thing that has not changed, and I just can't see it changing, in 30 years, it has never, ever changed, that that the relationship between the attorney and the family that you're working for, okay, that has never changed. I can't, I just don't see that changing. You know, you've got fill-in-the-blank websites. Yeah, I get it, but, you know, in the 1800s, there were fill-in-the-blank forms. You know, it's the same thing. And I've been on these websites and stuff, and it's like, you know, it's just a glorified fill-in-the-blank exercise. And they ask you questions that you don't really know what the answer is, because how would you know what the answer are? You know, the real answer, not just the, I mean, you can fill in the blank. I get that. But at the end of the day, you know, they say, oh, it's artificial intelligence, artificial intelligence. Hey, okay, wonderful. It's artificial intelligence. What does that mean? Does that mean that they understand? Does that mean that they can ask you the questions that really need to be asked? You know, we were doing expert systems. That was my first job, was putting together an expert system for the guys who were deploying back in, you know, the EDRE pack. We call it, you know, emergency deployment readiness exercise. That was the software package that we put together, and it was wills and powers of attorney and all the rest of this stuff. Okay, that's 30 years ago, and it's the same. It hasn't significantly changed in terms of how do you figure out what a particular family, what a particular individual needs. Okay, how do you put this all? How do you bring all this stuff together and make it relevant? That hasn't changed, and nothing I saw would suggest to me that has changed. You know, they were analogizing it to, they were saying, oh, well, you know, this is like the doctors, and the doctors have this new software, and doctors diagnose cancer at the 64% rate but accuracy, but this machine is 94%, okay? Well, that's a huge jump, okay? That's a much better rate, obviously, of diagnosis, of taking all the data, crunching it all together and coming up with a conclusion. Does that mean you don't need a doctor? I don't think it means you don't need a doctor. I think what it means is now you've got a doctor who's got better tools. Okay? I mean, it used to be if they were going to cut you open, okay, you know, they didn't bother washing the tools. You know, they didn't know about that stuff. Well, now they do. And now they have lasers and they have all kinds of wonderful stuff to make it easier for doctors to do their job. Okay, that doesn't mean that the doctor can get out of the loop. Okay, it doesn't mean that you don't need to talk to the doctor to figure out what's appropriate in your case, you know, using those tools and everything. And the same way with the legal services. You know, look, you've been able to fill in the blanks since the, you know, Gutenberg started with the printing press. Well, maybe a few years later. Okay, you've been able to fill in the blanks, but that's what this. That's what the current technology is, and I could be wrong, you know, but in 30 years I haven't been, and I just keep hearing the same stuff. The stuff that they were talking about in legal tech, it was like, oh, look at the exponential growth of computing power, and we've got these new softwares, the new artificial intelligence, and all the rest of this stuff. Well, that's all great. Wonderful. Hurrah. Okay? Yeah, we've got jet airplanes now, but, you know, it's still people riding in the jet airplanes. We've got these tools, but it's still people, you know, it's still families, it's still, you know, I haven't seen any behavior in all my professional career. I haven't seen any behavior from the people I've met with, the family, that it wasn't in the Bible, okay? People don't change. People are the same. The tools that we use, those change. And it makes it possible to provide a much higher level of service. That's true. But fundamentally, you know, you can't improve on the Bible. It's all right there. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
Come fly with me, let's fly. You are but a dream.
Welcome back to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. If you have a question, comment, or concern about wills, trusts, or probate, if you're wondering, how do I get power of attorney? If you want to bend steel in your bare hands, you know, leap tall buildings and see them go bound, stop speeding locomotives, change the course of mighty rivers, can you do that with a power of attorney? Well, no, but you can probably hire somebody to do it for you. using somebody else's money if they gave you the right power of attorney. Let's see. How do we beat the high cost of long-term care? How do we buy, sell, develop whatever real estate? How do we keep that business going? Any of that sort of thing. That's, you know, easy for you to get on board. Just give us a call at 888-463-2843. That's 888-GO-DAVID, and we'll get you right on the air. Necessary housekeeping. Number one, Valentine's Day workshop coming up this Friday. You know, five more shopping days until Valentine's Day. So if you'd like to come to our life plan workshop on Valentine's Day, I think we're getting a little bit tight on space. I know we are. But there might be a couple places in the hallway. So give us a call, and we'll squeeze you in. I know we ordered, you know, it's going to be looking like a hothouse over there with all the flowers we got, but have coming in. And on Valentine's Day, the team members will be going around to the to visit our families in the in the local places and the facilities. And if you'd like to get on the distribution, easy to do. Easy. David at davidcarrierlaw.com is the email address. And just email us with the name of the facility, name of the person, room number. Okay? And if we're going to that facility, which we probably are, we'll stop by. Okay? One of the team members will stop by and, you know, deliver some flowies on Valentine's Day. I like to do that. And so that's what we're gonna do. And if you don't have email, that's okay too. Just call the number, 888-GO-DAVID, right? Call the number. We're there. Okay? I mean, just leave a message if you want to leave a message, or, you know, if you hit button number one, then you'll talk to a live person, and they'll take your information for you. Okie doke, very good. Talking a little bit about the and I don't want to be don't be obsessed about it, but I was just saying we took about half the team to a conference. We had 45 of the law firms there, most states represented, and just sort of where are we at in terms of the legal profession and all the rest of this. And one of the things that kind of got me was the notion that all this, you know, technology coming that's going to disrupt the relationship, you know, the attorney-client relationship, blah, 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 blah. And I've been hearing this blah, blah, blah for 30 years, okay? I'm very interested in using technology. We use a lot of technology to make sure that we deliver to our clients the highest possible level of service. That's why phone calls are, how do you think it's possible for us to make phone calls free? Okay, how is that possible? It's only possible because we're extremely efficient at what we do. You know, when you call in, you know, one of the, we have two client service coordinators, you know, pick up the phone, no waiting, deep to deep. And all of a sudden, all your stuff is right there. You know, so if you have a question about what's going on, we can answer it. It's not like somebody has to go running off to a file room somewhere, pull the file, go page into it, before you get your answer. Do you see? So the technology is very important. I'm not downplaying the role of technology. It's very, very important. It makes it possible for us to deliver the quality of service, the level of service that people deserve, okay? It makes it possible for us to use, you know, I always say, on the intro, two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. Right. Well, my Georgetown University law degree is a Master of Laws in Taxation. It's a Master of Laws degree, and it's all about tax. Well, you know, the deal with tax is that you're saving tons of money for people with tons of money. And those people with the tons of money have tons of money to hire people like me to figure out how to save them tons of money on their taxes. Okay? It's expensive. Very expensive. It's a very high level of involvement, of service, of all those things. And typically, it has cost a lot of money to do that because of the way the legal services have been provided. Well, what we're trying to do, what we have been doing, you know, there's no question about it. We've been doing it for the last 24 years. So what we've been doing is bringing that level of service to people like my mom and dad, you know, people who worked, people who saved. People don't have tons of money, but, you know, it's people who don't have tons of money who need the services the most. You know why? Because you don't have the margin of error. You know, it's most important that you've got to make every dollar work. You've got to make your savings last. You've got to do it correctly within the system, absolutely, within the law. Okay? It's got to be within the law, sure. Right? But you can't go stumbling around. You can't be, jeepers, I hope I'm doing this right. It can't be that way, because if it is, then, you know, you don't get a second chance. You don't get another opportunity to get it right. And that's the beauty of the technology. Does it replace what I do? No, not in a million years. I just don't see that ever happening. We've got a caller on the line. Good morning. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Good morning.
How can I help?
I have just a question of curiosity.
Sure.
I am 50 years old and returned to college, so I'm with the 19 and 20 year olds.
That's exciting.
It is exciting. They're telling us that they're not being taught to write in cursive in the schools anymore.
Can you believe that?
So the first thing I thought is, well, how do you sign a legal document if you don't know how to write in cursive? And has the legal system addressed this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's not really an issue. Number one, isn't it freaking amazing? You know, the Palmer method, it was good for the last three centuries, but now we're too smart for it?
Correct.
I mean, is that the problem? I mean, are you finding that?
They're
that
lazy.
these kids are too smart? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's just lazy.
Yeah!
Yeah.
I got a 5-year-old who's starting to write cursive now.
Yes.
You know, but you got to do it, and it's not particularly easy. You know, it never was easy. Let me ask you, what other observations do you have as, you know, just kind of seeing that 20, 30-year differential there?
So far, that's the only one that's really stuck out, because I think when these kids go to buy a house and they've got 30 forms to sign, how is anybody going to know that they actually signed it? Are they going to use thumbprints or?
Yeah, that's right. Right. Hey, I can look in the computer, scan my retina, you know, and
right.
They'll know what it's me. Yeah, yeah. Here, have a sample of my DNA. Well, actually, it's not really an issue, because what the law says and has said for quite a while is any mark that's intended as a signature is acceptable. So one of the things that used to happen years ago is we would get, when you're signing documents, people, oh, sign it exactly as it is printed below the line, right? Well, and we would get documents back from the registers of deeds offices saying, oh, well, they didn't put this middle initial in, or we couldn't make out the signature or something. You know, they kick it back to you. But that was a mistake. I mean, it was a mistake even then, because any mark that you intend to adopt as your signature is legally valid. And the only thing that has to match is that the printed name under the line has to match the printed name in the what we call the jurat, in the acknowledgement, where the notary public says, you know, John Jones and Nancy Smith appeared before me. If it says John J. Jones underneath the line, it can't say John Jones in the jurat, in the acknowledgement. It's got to say John G. Jones. Are you with me on that?
Yeah.
And then if he wants to put a skull and crossbones, well, okay. It's up to you. You want to put a squiggly line, if you want to print out your name or what have you, that's all okay. But the key is it's got to be some. This is why, like, we have a lot of clients with Parkinson's and what have you, and what we'll do is we'll get a good signature from before, a clear signature from before, and make a stamp. Okay? Well, then pressing down on the stamp is them making a sign that they intend to adopt that document. That's their signature, and that'll work too. Okay,
so there's going to be a witness that's going to be the upholding.
That's right. The notary public, right?
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for calling, and good luck with your adventures in higher education. Take care. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
Fly. You are the one. Only you need the moon or under the sun.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show, and that's exactly how I feel about you, including you, Dan. Welcome to the David Carrier Show. Thanks for the persistence. How can we help?
Yes, David. I think I may have made a mistake titling things into my trust, and my attorney is retired. I can't contact him, and I was hoping you could answer my question.
Well, it's a lively legal discussion and not legal advice. So,
okay.
With that caveat, let's go ahead.
I'll use a false name here, but my trust is titled Dan J. Jones Agreement of Trust, dated 1/20/2002.
Okay.
When I'm buying new life insurance, and I had to title the insurance into the trust, and I titled it into the trust as Dan J. Jones Trust, dated 1/20/2002. After that, I got to looking at the paperwork, and other things I had titled that way, and I realized that the quitclaim title that he had made up for my home had the words Dan J. Jones Agreement of Trust, and the Agreement of are two words that I had left out when I titled everything else into it. Are they? Do they pick it close enough where that would raise a red flag? Would that present a problem if anything were to happen?
Well, you know, you like to get it right. I don't think that that's going to be a. That's not going to be a showstopper. I doubt it, because lots of times when we, you know, of course we always use the correct name. But it's not at all unusual. It's not at all unusual for insurance companies or brokerage houses to cut down on the name. You know, it's not at all unusual for them to abbreviate or to take words out and things like that. So, if it doesn't say agreement of, I doubt that that's going to be much of an issue. I doubt it. But you've got plenty of time. So I just send it in and say, hey, you know, this is agreement of trust, not simply trust. The technical thing, actually, is you can't title things to a trust. The correct way to do it is to title it to the trustee of the Dan J. Jones. You know, so Dan J. Jones, trustee of the Dan J. Jones Trust. That's technically how it's supposed to go. But people all the time they get it wrong. They just title it to the trust, and it doesn't seem to have caused a major disruption. You know, I think everybody gets it, even if you just say to the trust. But technically, that's not correct. Technically, you should say to the trustee of the trust, not simply to the trust.
Okay.
And since you've got the time, you know.
Yeah, I'll take care of that.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time.
Hey, not a problem. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks a lot.
You betcha. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, reminding you that Valentine's Day is on Friday. What does that mean? That means we're having not one but two life plan workshops. These are, I think we're pretty close to full on them, but you might be able to get in. Just give us a call at 888-463-2843. All right, hit the number one, talk to a live person, and they'll sign you up. All kinds of neato things happening at the workshop. I cannot divulge what will be happening at the Life Plan Workshop because we haven't figured it out yet. But it'll be fun. at least I'll have fun. It's a good time. Also on Friday, also on Valentine's Day. Team members will be making the rounds of the long-term care facilities, you know, bringing a little bit of cheer to our families that we work with. If you'd like to have us make a stop by your loved one, more than happy to do that. We don't pass out cards or anything like that. It's just a flower at the little Valentine. And if you'd like us to do that, we have to know. And the way we would know is by you telling us. And the way you would tell us is to drop an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. Okay? And in the email, let us know the person's name, the room number, and the facility. Okay? We don't go to all the facilities. I don't even know if that's true. If we don't go to all, we may go to all of them. But in any event, if you let us know the facility, the person's name, and the room number, then we can, you know, if we're in there already, we might as well just stop by and say hi. So how about that? Just drop us the email. That'd be fine. You can call the office and do the same thing. All righty. That's for Valentine's Day. Let's get to a couple of emails. We haven't got to any emails yet. This is a good one. I want to name trust, quote, last name trust. I'm guessing they're Smith Trust, right? But attorney tells me omitting word revocable may cause confusion. Should I relent? I want to name our joint revocable trust simply, for example, last name trust, but my attorney tells me this may spell trouble down the line as people will not know if it is revocable or irrevocable. My position is that those who need to know will be getting the pertinent pages of the trust anyway, and the trust structure will be evident. Should I relent and include the word revocable in the name of the trust? Well, let me tell you, we never put revocable or irrevocable in the name of the trust. Never, ever. No reason for it, for exactly this person's explanation here. There's no need to. You know, we don't have to put that in there, and we don't. And if you did, it's not a, there's no commitment. You could call it the, the Smith family, you could call it the peanut butter and jelly agreement, you know, or the, I don't know, the Archduke Ferdinand agreement. I don't know. Put whatever you want in there, you know, call it, you know, Mickey and Minnie's Great Adventure or something like that. You don't even have to call it a trust if you don't want to. You can call it whatever you want, because anybody who relies on it does need a certificate of trust. Okay, the certificate of trust will have all the necessary provisions right there. Now, it's true that you might get people looking cross-eyed at it. I don't think for revocable, but if you're the Smiths and you call your trust the agreement between peanut butter and jelly under agreement dated, January 1st, 2014, yeah, you might get, what is this peanut butter and jelly all about? Or, Bob and Sue, trustees of the peanut butter and jelly trust, PB&J trust. Well, you know, some people might get a chuckle out of that, but I know folks, I know attorneys who never use the person's name. They're always coming up with goofy names for the trusts. In my practice, we generally use the last name, so Smith Family Trust, Smith Family Protection Trust. Just so we know what the heck it is we're talking about, we don't have to keep referring back. You know, it just makes it easier. But that's not a legal requirement. It's more convenience for us, convenience for the family. But you can name your trust whatever you want, and omitting the terms revocable, I completely disagree with that. We never use revocable or irrevocable in the trusts. In the trust that we do. Let me just see if I can knock down a couple more here. Can a personal representative of a probated estate sue the interested parties for expenses beyond the value of the estate? The entire estate was depleted by attorney fees. That never happens. Can those at first stood to gain be asked not to share? No, they can't. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
You've been listening to The David Carrier Show, a lively discussion addressing your questions and concerns, but not legal advice. There is a big difference. So when making decisions that affect your family, your property, or yourself, the best advice is to seek good advice, specific to your unique needs. If you missed any of today's show or would like additional information about the law offices of David Carrier, please visit davidcarrierlaw.com.